Welcome to tonight's episode of Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Ruth Ann.
And I'm Robert.
And we're happy to have with us this evening a very special guest. And her name is Barbara Berger, and we will get to her in just a moment. First, I'd like to remind everyone about our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can listen to all of our past shows there for free, and you can also find us on iTunes by searching Well-Rounded Corners. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, all new shows will automatically download to your computer or iPod within 48 hours of broadcast. You can also listen to us in the archives of our BBS radio page or live every other Tuesday on BBS Radio Channel 1.
That's right. And as Ruth Ann mentioned, we're lucky to have with us Barbara Berger. She's with Beam Team Books. And she was born and grew up in the United States, but today lives and works in Copenhagen. In addition to English, she speaks Danish and Swedish. She's an author, and she writes all of her books in English. She gives lectures, workshops, and courses with her son, Tim Ray, and offers private sessions to individuals who wish to work intensely with her. Now, to date, she's written 15 self-empowerment books documenting and presenting the tools and insights she's discovered over the years on her quest. Her books include the international bestseller, The Road to Power, Fast Food for the Soul, which is available in 30 languages, Are You Happy Now? 10 Ways to Live Your Happy Life, which is available in 13 languages, and The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind. In all of her books, Barbara explores and explains the incredible power of mind and how we can use this power to wisely live happy lives right now, regardless of the outer events and circumstances. Barbara, we're pleased to have you with us. And I'd like to know, what makes you passionate about your work? What drives you to do the wonderful work that you do?
I would like to say that I'm passionate about finding a way out of suffering. That's sort of been the quest that I've been on my whole life. And all of my books are really about the different tools and the different insights that I have discovered over the years that have helped me, first of all, and which I have had a great fun sharing with everybody else. So that's really what I'm all about. I'm a spiritual seeker, and I feel that I'm on this quest to figure out, you know, like, how can we live a happy life? That's what we all want. How can we be free? So my latest book, which is just come out in the United States, is called The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind. And in this book, I really try to map out the mechanism of mind. In other words, the way our minds work, because I have discovered that this is the key to living a happy life. So, yes, that's really what I'm about.
That's amazing. I wonder how, I mean, you talk about that you've been on a quest to ease suffering. So how did you arrive at your basic ideas to, your basic tenets on how to do this?
Well, I would say that, well, first of all, I grew up in the United States, and during the 1960s, I grew up in the suburb of Washington, D.C., because my father worked in the Pentagon. Uh-huh. And then when the Vietnam War came, I had a boyfriend who got drafted to go to Vietnam, and we were actually very against the war. But since I had a father who worked in the Pentagon, who was a very high military person, it didn't really go down that well in my family. So I ran away from home with this guy, and it was actually in the beginning of the protest movement. So there weren't that many young people at that time who were against the war, and we went underground, and we left the United States, and that's how I came to live in Scandinavia. We ended up in Sweden, actually, where we got political asylum, because the Swedes were actually, they were really against the Vietnam War at that time, too. So in a way, I had a very sort of traumatic youth, and that sort of set the tone of my life, you could say. From that time on, I was started to explore different pathways to, you know, how can we live a happy life? How can we make this world a better place? And so in the beginning, my focus was, say, social and political. And then the next sort of phase in my development was after sort of the youth revolution of the 60s and the 70s, then I sort of began to have this passionate interest in the role of food, actually, in our mental and physical well-being and health. And then I wasn't with this American guy anymore, and I met a Danish man and married a Dane, and that's how I came to live in Copenhagen, Denmark. And so we opened a health center in Copenhagen here, which we had for many years, where we, you know, we taught about health foods, organic foods, diet, and all that. But then at some point I started to realize, and we were doing consultations and teaching, you know, healthy living, but I started to realize that food actually wasn't the whole answer either, and health food wasn't the whole answer either, that there was more to healing and more to curing suffering than just diet. And so then I started to study psychology and the science of mind, and that led to a study of the nature of consciousness and metaphysics and traditional spirituality. So I really studied all kinds of different areas and on my quest to really find out, you know, what's going on. And so that all that has led me actually to this last book, where I really tried to map out the discoveries that I have made along the way. And that is basically that the incredible power of mind, that is really what is the determining factor in our experience of life.
So all these other things that you examined and researched, you know, food and whatnot, those sound like very important supporting things. But in the end, it comes down to our. It's hard to have a good outlook if you're eating bad food.
Absolutely,
but you can't completely eat bad food and be. You can't eat good food and be okay. You know, there's other parts to it.
Yeah. Well, again, don't misunderstand me. Of course, I always suggest that people follow a healthy diet,
right,
and they exercise and all this. But your mental attitude, the key factor is actually, because one of the things I actually discovered when we had a health food center was that if people were really obsessed with diet and that the motivating factor was fear. So that was their mental attitude, and it was really hard. It's really hard to support the healing process in the body if one is really in a fearful state. So I started to realize that there were other factors involved. How do you explain that two people on the same diet in the same environment, that the one gets better and the other doesn't? What is the X factor there, you could say? So that led me to say, okay, there's other things going on here. And of course, there's so much research today that actually shows how much our mental attitude influences the immune system and healing in the body. And so, but at the time when I found that out in the early 80s, there wasn't that much information out about these things as there is today.
And we didn't have the tools that we have now to research. You had to go to the library and do your research.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Well, I believe too that if I think of, if I eat something because, as you said, I'm afraid that I'll get sick, or I'm afraid that I'll die early if I don't, or whatever. I mean, that's nice to eat well, but on the other hand, if I take it to a different level, just for my personal experience, if I take it to a different level and it's more of a spiritual act and a gift to myself, then I give myself something healthy. And there's not a fear there. It's the gift and the positive.
Right.
I personally believe that food is different. All inside us and through us, you know.
Absolutely.
it's a different experience, and you have a positive relationship with food that way.
Well, we all know that the true healer is love. I mean, that's really what you're talking about. That
yes.
The healing power of love, and love is, as you say, the gratitude, the blessing, the understanding of the gift of life. I mean, it's a completely different approach to whatever you're doing than anger, fear, those kind of energies, and it totally changes the whole equation, you could say.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So, but actually, in my new book, The Awakening Human Being, One of the things that I've also really discovered later on and have been working a lot with people is that I have discovered that if we first of all start by saying that thought, the what we think is the determining factor in how we experience events. In other words, that reality or whatever is happening in our lives is just an event. But our thoughts about these events, our interpretation of what's going on in our lives is actually what we experience. And so having discovered this mechanism, which is what I really try to map out in my latest book, this mechanism of how mind actually determines our experience, and that reality can often be, I mean, that we don't experience reality directly. We only experience our interpretation of reality.
Absolutely.
And I think that this is a fundamental insight. If we get this, if we understand this, it can totally change the way we approach everything that's happening in our lives. And maybe just to explain sort of in a more concrete way to our listeners what I'm actually trying to say. If we take any event in our life, for example, let's just say a divorce, that's an event. And what if you would say, what is the reality of a divorce? A divorce is actually two people who have lived together are now no longer living together. So that's what a divorce is. That's an event. But then we have each person, we have our interpretation of what this event means in our life. And if we take the example of a divorce, you could say that for one person, when they get divorced, it's like, oh, it's the end of the world. I'm never going to have love again in my life. I'll be alone for the rest of my life. And this person goes into becomes very desperate, goes into depression, is really feeling terrible. Another person can get divorced, and it could be, you know, like, hallelujah, I'm finally free.
Yes.
So, but the event itself is still only the event. The event is like a divorce. Two people who have lived together are now no longer living together. So we don't experience that. We experience our story about what this event means to us. And when we get that, it's so self-empowering, because it means that if we are not happy with the way things are, maybe we want to look at what our stories are about these events in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. It is so easy to have an event and tell ourselves, oh, if this happens, we will be devastated.
Yeah.
And of course, we're not going to get through the event anywhere near the same way as someone who says, you know what, this is really hard and it's going to be painful for a while, but there's good to come of it, or there's a lesson somewhere in there, whatever we need to say to frame it in a way that we know we can survive it and we may even get something from it.
Well, actually, what I've discovered, I work as a therapist, so I work with people all the time, and of course, people come to me when they're in crisis and when they're having problems and so on. What you're describing is actually really what I see all the time, and it's really what I call catastrophic thinking about. I mean, an event happens, and then when people are in crisis, they usually come and then they tell me their story about whatever it is. It's usually either the breakup of a relationship, or it's the some kind of money, business, financial problem, or it's a health problem. These are the three main, or something with their kids. But usually when you actually listen to people and you start to go into the story, you see that the event itself and their interpretation of the event, they don't match. And that's why they're feeling so terrible. Usually when I get people to sort of calm down and say, okay, let's just see what are the facts here, what is actually going on, and then let's compare this to your story. The story is usually very catastrophic in terms of what's actually going on, as you were just saying. Instead of saying, you know, it's the end of the world and I can't manage this, you know, like, okay, you know, maybe this is tough, but, you know, I can get through this. And, you know, I've had other crises in my life. And what would be, you know, like a sane, healthy approach to dealing with this matter? So, yes. So this again is to understand the incredible power of our own minds and how we experience the events in our own lives.
And I have a Reiki clients, and many times, you know, I try to explain to them that how you visualize things and how you expect things and what you take from them, you know, that is your choice. You know, you can tell yourself all day long, you know, that, as you said with the divorce, that I can't do this. This is horrible. It's the end. We were so happy. And many times, if they think about it for a minute, they really weren't that happy in the first place. So is this really the end of something that's, this is going to be a catastrophe? Or do I have a chance here to maybe do some healing and, you know, and have a life?
Well, I think also the thing that you're actually saying is, which I also see in people, and of course have found out in myself, what you're saying is that when you are totally identified with your story, that's when it is so painful, and that the ability to actually stand outside a bit and say, okay, what was the reality here, and let's compare it to my story. Already there, you are becoming a witness to whatever it is that you're thinking, and in that shift of awareness from being totally identified with the story to saying, okay, I am this divine soul and I have this story about this event, you suddenly have the ability to say, well, okay, is this a sane and good way for me to approach this problem? So it's so liberating. It's so fantastic to understand that, you know, okay, this story is maybe not the most productive way for me to deal with this situation.
Well, then, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and then as you are also saying, you know, like, you know, what you can also say, who knows what's good or bad? What is the divine plan for me here in this lifetime? What is it I'm supposed to learn from? I mean, because that's the other thing I have really, really discovered working as a therapist. People, they come and they're in crisis, because people don't come if everything's hunky-dory, they don't come. So they come when there's something so-called wrong, something they feel that they need help with, something they feel they can't deal with. But I have also discovered that it's absolutely true that these so-called crises are really the open door to major transformation for almost everyone. So the gift of crisis, which people don't want to hear at the beginning,
right.
But people come around to seeing, you know, like, I'm so thankful that, you know, that happened to me. I wouldn't be the person that I am today if I hadn't had that experience. Those are the kind of things that people actually end up finding out.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I had an example of that. I was teaching a class my student and I were just chatting, and I made a comment about something. I don't even remember what it was. And it was so funny because he said to me something really profound. And I said, well, that's really profound. Thank you. And he said, well, you said the same thing to me last week about my life. And I thought, oh, well, okay. It was so different because it was my life. You know, I wasn't seeing what I could see about his life.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I just, that really made me think. I had a good chuckle at myself. We both had a good chuckle about that, you know, it really does show how, as you said, when it's your story, it doesn't really sound the same as when it's someone else's.
No, but exactly that, because we're so identified with our own story. We don't see that it's a story, but when somebody else does it, then it's much easier to see.
which is why we have therapists and all kinds of other people to help us, right?
Well, I think that's also what we're talking about now. Also, is one of the key concepts that I'm writing about in my books, and which I'm talking to my clients about, and which we teach when we have our workshops, and that is that there is often, almost always, a difference between reality and our thinking. This is sort of like a basic, fundamental, key concept, that reality actually, and by that I mean, you know, like what is happening right now, right this moment. And to actually to get yourself or to get someone else to stop up and look at, especially when they're freaking out and not feeling well and really unhappy about something, to say, you know, like, well, what actually is wrong with this moment? And that's like, whoa.
Yes. Yes, that's huge, and we don't really think about that until we learn that or think about it. you know.
Yeah, because it's like, really, when you start to get that, it's like, this moment is, you know, okay, oh, I'm here, I'm sitting now talking to you, and we're having this lovely conversation, and everything else is actually just a story. This moment is just now. And we have become so mental in our lives. We are so occupied with either worrying about the future or regretting the past. We are so seldom present right now. And so when we start to get that and we see that this moment is actually quite okay, and that everything else is a story, is a kind of projection which doesn't have any reality to it, that is like also extremely life transforming to get that and to keep getting that over and over again. Because you could also say, you know, like, what is actually preventing you from being happy right here, right now? If you ask yourself that question, it can only be a story. Because what else could possibly prevent you from being happy in this moment?
That's a very, that makes so much sense. I have so many times people will ask me, what do you think I should do? Or I can't decide, or I don't know what's the right answer or right decision. And I ask them, I said, you know, close your eyes a moment and just talk to yourself and listen to yourself. Mm-hmm. What in this moment, what is the answer?
Mm-hmm.
And usually they go, oh, well, I agree with you. We don't seem to live in the present now. Mm. You know, we're so busy worrying about the future and regretting the past, and you know, I've had to really work on that myself, is to just enjoy or live through the present, because that is all we have, really.
Mm. Well, it's also, I mean, part of it is that because of the way we've been brought up and the way we've been programmed and the things we have learned and the values that our society has today, we've also been taught that our happiness depends on outer circumstances. It depends on, you know, like what we have, what kind of job we have, who we're married to, you know, how beautiful our kitchen is, or how our home looks, or what kind of car we drive, or how thin we are. I mean, we have all this stuff that's out there that we think is somehow determining whether we're living a happy life or not. And so all of that makes it extremely stressful to be a human being today.
It does.
And when you start to realize the incredible power of your mind, and you start to realize that all you have is this present moment, then you can say, like, what does any of that have to do with anything? Especially when you start to be more present in this now moment, it's like you discover that you are the happiness that you seek. You already are it. It's like, I usually say to people, it's like our true nature is like, you know, the radiance of the sun. That's who we are to begin with. And then we have all these stories, all these ideas about what we need to be happy, and they're like the clouds that are covering the radiance of the sun, which is what we already are.
Oh, I like that analogy. That makes such good sense, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, like, so it's, what is preventing us from experiencing this radiance, which is our true nature right now? I mean, it can only be a story. Because again, it's like we are going away from ourselves instead of being present with who we really are. That's also why I think what your example about, if you have a client and they don't know what to do, and you can get them to calm down enough to go within, the answer is always
it is.
There.
It is. Know? It is.
Because that's who you are to begin with. You always know. When you stop, when you become quiet, when you sit down, when you go within, everybody always knows what's right for them. It's when you're projecting, you know, outside of yourself, I need his approval, I need her love, I need to do all that stuff. That's where we get confused.
Well, we're going to have to take a short break here. And when we get back, we'll have more with Barbara Berger.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system. And Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as La Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415. And welcome back to Well-Rounded Corners. We're talking here with Barbara Berger. And in the first segment, we were talking about what it means to be an awakened human being and the disconnection between reality and what people observe and what they feel about reality or interacting with it. And in your book, you're talking about that everyone is seeking happiness. But you also say that most people are seeking happiness in the wrong place. So what do you mean by this?
Well, as we were saying before, or as I said before, that the way we've been brought up, the way we've been programmed, you could say, is that we believe that our happiness depends on outer circumstances. In other words, we believe that our happiness depends on, you know, like if I get a great husband or if I make a lot of money or if I have a thin body or, I mean, we have put all these sort of conditions, outer conditions on what we think it takes to live a happy life. So if we believe that, and most of us do since that's the way we've been brought up, it's a very stressful way of living. First of all, because we can't control outer circumstances. But second of all, and most important of all, is that we are already the happiness that we seek. What is our true nature? I have discovered on my quest that when we start to understand the difference between reality and our thinking, and when we start to understand that we only have this now moment, and when we start to sort of notice what this now moment is and look within, we discover that we already are the happiness that we seek, and that all of these expectations, shoulds, conditions, that they actually are leading us away from ourselves, and they are actually making our lives extremely stressful. So yes, I believe that we are looking for happiness in all the wrong places, unfortunately.
I would agree with that.
Also, you could say it's because we haven't learned the things that I, for example, write about in my new book, The Awakening Human Being. The way our minds work and the difference between reality and our thinking and the way our thinking affects our lives, all of these things, it's not anything that any of us learned in school, because we didn't get taught this. Not that many people on the planet knew about this stuff when we were growing up. And actually here in Scandinavia, a lot of people have told me that they believe that the mental laws that I describe in my book will soon be taught in school today, so that our children will start to learn these things.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope that we, you know, in school we learn what we, quote, need to know, but like you say, what we need to know is really not taught in school, and that's unfortunate. And I don't know how we're going to get to a point where it is. And I guess, you know, there's always been some room for interpretation as to what that is. But really, at a core level, I think we all know that what you're saying, you know, the what we've discussed really makes sense. And it's really hard for someone to come in and argue with it. And I would think it would be great to have, if children knew these things, they would mm-hmm. really have a leg up in dealing with what, and rather than having to discover it. I mean, you know.
Well, I'd like to say to our listeners that the mental laws that's sort of my concept, the way I've sort of tried to describe the way the mind works, and I call it the mental laws, and that's the first part of my new book is about the mental laws in this book, The Awakening Human Being. But I'd like to say to all our listeners that if you're interested in the mental laws, you can go in on my website, www.beamteam.com, www.beamteam.com, and you can download for free the mental laws. I have taken this section of my book and we've put it on the website so people who really want to study this and learn about the mental laws, you can do it. So you can go in there and download them for free. And what I do is in these mental laws is I try to actually map out the mechanism of mind, because I've discovered that just in the same way as there are physical laws, there are also mental laws. By physical laws, I mean like the law of gravity, for example. That's a physical law. The law of gravity is a law because it's an impersonal mechanism that affects all human beings. So in other words, if you stand on top of a 10-story building and you jump off, you're going to fall down. And it doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States. It doesn't matter if you're a little kid. It doesn't matter if you're rich. It doesn't matter if you're poor. It doesn't matter. It doesn't take into consideration who you are, if you're a good person. It's an impersonal mechanism that affects everyone. And in the same way, I have discovered that the way the mind works is also an impersonal mechanism that affects all of us. And because we don't know about these mental laws, we are actually victims of our own minds. But if we start to understand the way our minds work, then we can actually use this information to live a happy life. So it's very important information, this understanding.
Well, we'll have that linked on our website for this post. We'll put a link to that page that has
to that page. That would be great. Yeah.
The way you describe these mental laws, it's just I think it's really, really helpful. You know, I think in school and in most people's childhood, I don't know, you know, I can't speak for the whole world, but I think many times we are taught, you know, the exact opposite of this. You know, you talking about the divorce, when parents get divorced, kids, of course, tend to say, well, what did I do that made them split up? And mm-hmm. if we're not taught somewhere along the way that their choices are not to do with our, you know, who we are, mm-hmm. then I agree with you. I would love to see that taught in school, that, you know, can you imagine how different the world would be?
Exactly. Well, so therefore we're on the forefront of these developments. So it's very exciting. When we're talking about self-empowerment, we're talking about really liberation. I mean, this is just so exciting. I get so excited when I get out there and teach about this stuff. And I must say that the people who I meet who have either read my books or have been to sessions with me or who, you know, have been to some of our lectures and actually get this stuff. I get so many emails and so much feedback from people. It's like, hallelujah, man. This information changes lives. It's just so wonderful.
Oh, that I'm so glad that you put this in such a concise way so that, you know, it's not a mystery. It's right there. You can read it. You can, it's not hard to understand the way you put it. And it makes sense if we let go of what we've been told, that we need to please everyone around us. And if we don't, if we're not the perfect mother, the perfect daughter, the perfect son, the perfect worker, the perfect everything, that there must be something wrong with us and that we should always do what everyone else thinks we should. And, I like the way you put this. It makes really good sense to me. I mean, on a logical level, even for those who aren't,
everything that you're saying about all these shoulds, I mean, they are again, don't misunderstand me. It's not because we don't want to be the most loving, the most kind, the most the best version of whoever we are. It's more a question about to understand the mechanism of mind. And as you said before, that each one of us actually is living in our own mental universe. And so that our experience, the experience that I have or the experience that you have or the experience that anyone else has, they're all different. That each person is living their story. There is no common universal experience in the sense that events happen and then people go into their interpretations. So therefore, the whole idea that we can possibly be responsible for another person's reaction to anything goes against the way the mind works, goes against the universal laws. It's just not possible.
And you know, what you're saying is also backed up in modern science thinking,
absolutely.
You know, in quantum physics, in that when we observe reality, we create it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a physical sense, and whatever physical presence means, that's up for debate as well. But in a physical sense, when we observe reality, we create it. So it would stand to reason that thought, and it would work the same way. I mean, that would just be a natural extension of that.
Well, I think it reminds me of a study that I was just thinking about. It was talking about different people who undergo traumatic events like being assaulted or being in a war or, mm-hmm. or something. And some people will come back and, you know, they of course have some memories that aren't good and they have to do some healing and may need therapy or whatever kind of work they choose to have to heal. But some people are basically devastated, and it was connecting how the people were before the event and relating it to, you know, what happened after. It wasn't whether you were physically sick. It seemed to be, from what I remember from the study, if you tended toward depression or if you, you know, had previous incidents that you hadn't healed from. In other words, and it's not accusing someone, if you have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's not your fault. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying that from this study and others that I've seen, it was, you know, I mean, it makes sense physically to me too. If you've learned something, your brain has changed from everything you learn. And so, of course, a new experience, you're going to interpret differently than someone else in how you think about it, what you tell yourself. You know, I think that's so interesting.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely true that we're all living our stories, our interpretations of what's happening. It is really a very important thing that you're saying there, that events happen. I mean, we can take any event and different people respond differently to the exact same situation. So what is highly stressful for one person is an exciting challenge to another person. So again, this has to be factored in, that it's not the event in itself. It's the interpretation of the event. I mean, actually, I just saw an amazing interview with Tony Robbins and this 108-year-old woman who had been in a concentration camp and had survived a concentration camp, and all of her family had been killed. And I mean, it was the most horrible situation that anyone could imagine. But she had this amazing positive attitude towards life. It was like, it was really an incredible interview. And she was 108 and she was still alive and she was still playing the piano 3 hours every day. And everybody else had died. I mean, it was like, what was the factor here? And it seemed really obvious that she always found something to be grateful for. She said that was her secret, gratitude, no matter how terrible things were. So it's really, really interesting to start to understand this mechanism.
I would agree that her attitude and her ability to find things to be grateful for, the positive, it makes such a difference. What you just said made me think of, we have trees around our house, and when it gets windy, I tend to tell myself, because we've had severe storms before, oh, you know, this is dangerous. And so, yeah. and I get, you know, not anxious, but, you know, I'm thinking about those trees every time it gets windy. And it was windy a couple of days ago. And instead of doing that, I went outside and closed my eyes and put my arms up like I was flying. And I stood there on my back porch and I had the best time for about 10 minutes. I was in the back, so I don't think the neighbor saw me, but I had a ball and the wind was seriously hot. And that is one of the best days I've had in a long time. I just went out flying on the back porch. And so I wasn't worried about the trees. It was the same exact event, but I just wasn't thinking about the trees falling on me.
Oh, what a sweet story. I really love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, I was so amazed because I thought, hey, I'm having fun. I'm not thinking, well, isn't that cool?
Well, actually, also, it makes me think what you're saying, too, is actually another exercise that I have in a lot of my books is that if you couldn't compare this moment to any other moment, what would be wrong with this moment?
Wow.
Because, I mean, it's always the comparison that actually makes us unhappy. It's always a story, because if you couldn't compare, you would always be okay.
I mean, hence the term ignorance is bliss that comes from.
Yeah, there's a lot of that too. Because, but again, it's more pointing to the fact that it is, we have expectations which are so unrealistic. We have stories which are so unrealistic. And again, that we are missing. Just your little story about going out on the back porch and having a great time. I mean, you were actually present. And that you what I'm hearing anyway is that you were very joyful. You had a great time.
I was. Really, that was fun.
Yeah, you didn't spin off into your catastrophic thinking about what the wind could mean and what might happen. And nothing did happen, actually. That's also the other thing that's interesting about your story. There was no tornado. There wasn't.
Right.
You were okay, right?
Yeah, I was so much better than okay. Yes. The problem is, as you've said, that my rational mind tends to go, you know, that tree might have a tendency to this and that and you know, this. And when I sit there and think in my head and I, you know, worry, it wasn't necessarily a worry. It was just that consciousness that overrode the ability to have fun in the moment. And really, it was the same wind, but it was uplifting me instead of, you know, knocking trees down on me.
Well, actually, you just used a word there that I thought was interesting. You said your rational mind. I would actually question that. Was that your rational mind? It was more your fearful mind, because your rational mind was actually more present in this moment and allowed you to enjoy the wonder of being alive on your back porch then.
Well, you know what I think made the difference for me in that moment was, as you're right, it is more rational, because I said, well, you know what? If a tree falls on me, I'm going to go looking at a beautiful tree, and I'm just going to come out here and it's going to, you know, what's the difference if I'm inside my home? It can still hit my home. I'm going to come out here and enjoy. It was a beautiful day. I'm going to come out here, and if a tree falls on me, I'm going to see a beautiful tree anyway, and I'd rather be doing that than sitting inside thinking, oh, I hear the wind, and that means a tree could fall.
But even the thought, you know, a tree is going to fall on me, and when you ask yourself, is that true? A tree did fall on you. I mean, it wasn't true.
That's what I did. I went out there and I said, you know, these trees have been here all these years. It's an old house. They've been here for years. They haven't fallen yet, and it's been windier than this. So whatever, I'm just going to go enjoy it. And at this moment, there is no tree on me, and so I'm not going to worry about it. And I had fun, and I just released, and I was in the moment. And
congratulations.
So what you're saying is so true.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to take a break here, and when we get back, we'll have more with Barbara Berger.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing, and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system. And Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments, to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as La Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415. Welcome back to our final segment here on Well-Rounded Corners. We have the pleasure of interviewing Barbara Berger, and we've been talking about her new books, just her wonderful outlook on life, very positive outlook on life. And Barbara, you've shared with us a lot, but I was wondering, is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think another thing I'd really like to share with people is that if you're having problems in your life, I would like to suggest that you take a look at your expectations to whatever is going on, and that you try to compare your expectations with reality. One of the things I've discovered from working with so many people and with myself is that when we're feeling unhappy, it's usually because our expectations and reality don't match. For example, in a relationship, your husband or your wife, if you're having problems with your partner, I usually discover when I work with people that they have expectations to their partner which don't match reality. In other words, they have expectations which are unrealistic in terms of who this other person is. And again, it's not really a question about right or wrong. It's more a question about getting real. We actually call our work getting real about who your partner is, and then deciding what you're going to do about reality instead of having a lot of expectations to another person which don't match who the person is. This causes so much conflict or suffering or unhappiness in a lot of relationships that we're not actually looking at who our partners really are. And so it's difficult to relate to this other person in a sane, constructive way. So that's something I would like to suggest, in which I also have some exercises in my books about how to do this. Actually, in the book, The Awakening Human Being, I have an exercise which I call looking at the difference between your expectations and reality when it comes to your partner.
I think part of that's I'm so glad you have that. It makes me think of all the stories that especially our little girls hear and read, the princess stories where they, you know, they have a conflict and then they end up married and they go off into the sunset and you don't ever hear, well, is this supposed to be perfect? How unreasonable is that? I mean, the poor prince, if you think about it.
Yeah,
you know, he has to be
a pretty high burden on him. Yeah,
and it's not. Yeah, and it's
got to be perfect, and she has to be perfect too. Yeah,
right. And
well, I can tell you actually an interesting story about this, doing this exercise with people. I always teach with my son. We were doing a workshop in northern Sweden for 80 business women, and then we decided we would do this relationship because that was one of the questions that came up a lot. So we did this relationship exercise where we asked all the women to make a list of all their expectations that they had to their partner, and then we went through that, and then we asked them to make a list of you know, what was the reality of their partner compared to this list of expectations. And we had a great time, and it took a while. And then at the end, after we were done, four women came up to us and they said, after they had done this exercise, they realized immediately that they had to leave their partner, that it would never work, that their expectations and the person, they were just so far apart, and that they realized that they couldn't change this person, and so they were wasting their time in this relationship. And then about 10 other women came up to us and said they were so thrilled that now they realized that how much they loved their partner, and they were going to just focus on all the wonderful things about their partner, and they were going to stop having these crazy, unrealistic expectations to their partner. So it was just such a riot the way this exercise affected people. Some people like woke up and said, you know, like, what am I doing with this person? It's never going to work. And other people came up and said, oh, hallelujah, I really can see that I should drop all that and I should focus on who this person really is and enjoy that. So again, it's a great, great exercise. And to do it, you could just take out a piece of paper and put a line down the middle, write the name at the top of your dear partner, and then on the left-hand column, write expectations, and then on the right-hand column, write reality. And then on the left-hand column, you can write whatever it is you would like this person to do. You know, he should play with the kids more, or he should stop drinking, or he should this, or whatever it is. And then once you've made your list, then write on the right-hand column the reality. What is the truth about the situation? Does he play with the kids, for example, sometimes, or does he play with the kids? He never plays with the kids, or, you know, or he shouldn't spend so much time on his computer. Well, what's the reality? How much time does he actually spend in his computer? So this sort of reality check thing can be very liberating. And then when you sort of get real and say, okay, what's the reality? Then you actually can decide what would be the constructive way to deal with this.
That's a great practical, you know, often when we're talking in metaphysics and not just metaphysics, but even in you know, self-help and self, empowerment, we talk about some very abstract things, but that's a very practical thing that people can do that actually, mm-hmm. you know, sort of boots on the ground sort of technique that people right. can put into place. And that's, those are really helpful.
Yeah. We don't get as many of those as I think we need. You know, it's no. where we can be spiritual and we can be metaphysical, but I think if we don't have the tools we need, you know, that exercise is wonderful.
Well, the second part of this new book of mine, The Awakening Human Being, is just exercises like this. All the practical, because as I say in the book, I'd like to say it now too, you can read all these books, but if you don't put it into practice, if you don't have the practical application in your daily life, it doesn't mean that much. So I try to, first of all, in my book to give this more, as you say, metaphysical explanation about the way the mind works. But the second part of the book is all this practical stuff. Well, how do we actually apply this in our daily life? Because otherwise transformation is not going to happen. So you have to understand it, first of all, but then you have to apply it. So yes,
I think that's where a lot of this sort of stuff breaks down. You know, I mean, I've seen people literally with their bookshelves full of self-help books and yet be in turmoil. And you know, I don't know if they've read them or not. I assume they have, but you know, if they have, you might say, well, gosh, that doesn't work. But I mean, clearly most of it probably does, and is just putting it into practice. And
yeah,
like how many diets, you know, diets too, people have all these, you know, you see all these diet books and stuff, and surely, you know, I'm sure people have purchased multiple books and have they put them to use, you know, I mean, it's, it's the follow through.
Absolutely. You gotta put it into practice. It's definitely not enough to just read this stuff.
And it's another case, I think, too, of not saying to yourself, oh, this won't work. This will never work. I could never learn that.
Well, but you should start with reading this stuff, though. I mean, if you're not, you know, it's not enough to read it, but you got to start somewhere. And it sounds like
understanding is step one. Awareness right. and understanding is step one, and then the practical application is step two. I mean, you have to have the understanding to put it into practice. But then it's so rewarding. I mean, when you have the understanding and you start to actually practice this stuff in your life, I mean, you really can see that things change and that you really do feel better. I mean, that's the litmus test. I mean, don't believe me, try it. I mean, you can read, I have over and over again say in this book and all my books, don't believe me. Here's some things you can test. Test it for yourself and see if it works.
Well, Barbara, it's been wonderful having you on. We've really enjoyed it. How can our listeners get in contact with you? And by the way, we're going to have links to your site and books and whatnot. But for those listening, how would they get in contact with you?
Well, go into our website, www.beamteam.com. And there you will see all the stuff that we're talking about. We also have a web shop where you can order all the books. And as I said, you can download The Mental Laws for free on the website. You can read the introduction to all these different things we've been talking about on the website there. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can send me an email to info@beamteam.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Wonderful. Well, like we said, we've had a wonderful time with you. And I just want to take this moment to remind our listeners about our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can go there. You can listen to all of our shows free. You can also find us in iTunes, wellroundedcorners.com. Just search that. You'll be able to have all of our episodes downloaded automatically to your iPod. I'm getting emails from people saying that's how they listen. They just, you know, they'll load up their iPod or MP3 player and just listen to us in the car. And that's a great thing. So really appreciate that and appreciate you, Barbara, for being on. And like
well,
I said,
thank been, you for inviting me. You've been great.
A wonderful guest. And hopefully I hope that our listeners are going to go check out your website and think they can get some real benefit. I know you've certainly, made me think of some things, and I hope that our listeners as well. So
that's it for this episode of Well-Rounded Corners. We'll see you next time.